to VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Dan Novak and Anna Mateo tell us how solar energy is helping villagers in Indonesia. Brian Lin presents this week's Science Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here are Dan and Anna.
On Indonesia's eastern island of Sumba, solar power is providing people with electricity. Having electric lights can mean many things. It can mean being able to work later in the evenings, making more money, and having more social gatherings. Before electricity came to the village of Lendeja, almost 2 years ago, the day ended when the sun went down. A few families who could pay for them would start loud generators, which release smoke. Some people connected lights to old car batteries, which would quickly run out or ruin appliances. Children sometimes studied by oil lamps, but these sometimes burned down homes when knocked over by the wind. Then social organizations brought small solar panel systems to Lendeja and other villages on the island. For Tamar Anajawa, it means much-needed extra money. It used to be dark at night. Now it's bright until morning, the 30-year-old mother of two said. So tonight, I work to pay for the children. Around the world, hundreds of millions of people live in communities without regular electricity. In Sumba, off-grid solar energy equipment is bringing people limited electricity years before normal power systems reach them. The International Energy Agency, or IEA, says 775 million people around the world lacked electricity service in 2022. The IEA says sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia are home to some of the largest populations without electricity. The United Nations and World Bank said in a 2021 report that not having electricity at home keeps people poor. People without power struggle to work in the modern economy, the report said.
Indonesia has brought electricity to millions of people in recent years. The World Bank says that between 2005 and 2020, the country has increased the percentage of people with electricity from 85 to 97%. But there are still more than 500,000 people in Indonesia living without electricity service. There are experts who say off-grid solar programs could be reproduced across the large nation of thousands of islands. Now, villagers often gather in the evening to continue the day's work. They also gather to watch television shows on cell phones that are recharged by solar panels and that help children do schoolwork by providing light. But solar power is still rare in Indonesia. The country wants more solar energy to meet its climate goals. But there has been limited progress. This is because households that are not already connected to a power grid cannot sell electricity back to the company, that supervises the power grid. Sumba Sustainable Solutions, based in eastern Sumba, aims to increase solar use. Working with international donors, it provides imported home solar systems. The systems can power light bulbs and charge cell phones. The company says on its website that it provides the equipment for monthly payments equal to $3.50 for 3 years. The organization also offers solar-powered appliances, like wireless lamps and grinding machines. It said it has sent over 3,020 solar light systems and 62 grinding machines across the island, reaching more than 3,000 homes. Similar programs exist in places like Bangladesh and Africa, south of the Sahara Desert. The World Bank says these programs help provide electricity for millions.
But off-grid solar energy systems like these do not provide the same amount of power as a grid. While cell phones and lights can be charged, the systems do not create enough power to operate devices like a sound system for a church. Off-grid solar projects face problems too, Jetty Arlenda said. He is an engineer with Sumba Sustainable Solutions. The company depends on donors to pay most of the cost of the equipment because villagers could not pay the high cost of the solar equipment at market prices. Villagers without off-grid solar panels continue to wait while Sumba Sustainable Solutions looks for more money from donors. I'm Dan Novak.
And I'm Anna Mateo.
The American Space Agency, NASA, is testing a snake-like explorer designed to search for signs of life in hard-to-reach places. The robot is known as the Exobiology Extant Life Surveyor, or EELS. NASA said the robot is equipped to move in ways that traditional explorer vehicles, called rovers, cannot. Engineers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, in California, are leading the development of the explorer. EELS is built to explore on its own, without real-time human control. It is being designed to operate on land, in water, and in harsh freezing conditions, NASA engineers said. The current model is now being tested in different environments. Future development will be based on how the current model performs. The team said the idea for the snake-like robot came from NASA's desire to search for signs of life in an ocean on Saturn's moon Enceladus. That ocean is thought to exist beneath the moon's icy surface. The current version of EELS weighs about 100 kilograms and stretches 4 meters long. It is made up of 10 identical pieces called screws, which can turn in different directions. The screws use an auger effect to move along surfaces. Parts of the robot can rise up or down to reach different places for capturing data. The testing has involved screws made of 3D-printed plastic as well as metal. The plastic screws have performed better on general surfaces, while the metal ones have been good in ice, the team said. Engineers have already tested eels in several environments, including sand, snow, and ice. Hiro Ono is the lead investigator for JPL on the eels project. He said in a statement, "The robot's development requires very different methods from those used for traditional spacecraft and explorers." Ono noted that a lot of information exists about how to design a four-wheeled vehicle. There is no textbook about how to design an autonomous snake robot to boldly go where no robot has gone before, he said. We have to write our own. That's what we're doing now. The developers said EELS is designed to operate on its own because of the communications delays that exist between Earth and deep space. So the team is seeking to make the robot's technology able to sense its environment, estimate risk, and travel and collect data with science instruments that are still being developed. The team noted that it will also be important for the explorer to be able to recover on its own without human assistance when it experiences difficulties. The project's autonomy lead researcher, Rowan Thacker, compared the EELS technology to that used in self-driving vehicles, but in a much different environment. Imagine a car driving autonomously, but there are no stop signs, no traffic signals, not even any roads. The robot has to figure out what the road is and try to follow it, Thacker said. Then it needs to go down a 100-foot drop and not fall. The team said in its final form, the robot will contain 48 actuators. Actuators are devices that act as small motors for the EELS robot. The actuators are designed to give the explorer the ability to change into different forms while operating complex machines and software systems. Thacker compared the actuators to steering wheels on a car. JPL's Matthew Robinson is the project manager for EELS. He said the team is currently putting the most effort into developing the robot's movements and autonomous abilities. He said later they will consider what science instruments can be put on the EELS. Scientists tell us where they want to go, what they're most excited about, and we'll provide a robot that will get them there. We just have to build it, Robinson said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about this week's science report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Sure, Ashley. Glad to be here.
Your report was about a new robot NASA is developing to explore hard-to-reach places in space. The report says the robot is still being developed and tested. How is NASA going about this?
Yes, engineers are currently trying to find different conditions the robot can effectively explore in, including sand, water, and ice. So they've been testing the Explorer in different conditions on Earth. So to do this, they took the robot to a ski resort to test its abilities in snow, to an ice skating center to see how it performs in ice, and to desert and underwater environments as well.
The report says one exploration target for the robot is one of Saturn's moons, where it will seek to look for signs of life in an ocean beneath the surface. Have the researchers identified other places and uses for the robot?
Yes, as I mentioned, they are still testing and improving the Explorer now, but the team did say that in the future, it could be deployed to our moon or Mars to explore hard-to-reach areas or to operate in severe environments astronauts would not be able to, and they say there is a good possibility that the robot could in the future be used on Earth in places that would be difficult or dangerous for humans or other exploring vehicles to reach.
Okay, well, thanks again for joining me today, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about the period known as the Cold War. The Cold War began after World War II. The main enemies were the United States and the Soviet Union. The Cold War got its name because both sides were afraid of fighting each other directly. In a hot war, nuclear weapons might destroy everything. So instead, both sides fought each other indirectly. They supported opposing sides in conflicts in different parts of the world. They also used words as weapons. They threatened and denounced each other, or they tried to make each other look foolish. Over the years, leaders on both sides changed, yet the Cold War continued. It was the major force in world politics for most of the second half of the 20th century. The Cold War world was separated into three groups. The United States led the West. This group included countries with democratic political systems. The Soviet Union led the East. This group included countries with communist political systems. The non-aligned group included countries that did not want to be tied to either the West or the East. Harry Truman was the first American president to fight the Cold War. He used several policies. One was the Truman Doctrine. This was a plan to give money and military aid to countries threatened by communism. The Truman Doctrine effectively stopped communists from taking control of Greece and Turkey. Another policy was the Marshall Plan. This strengthened the economies and governments of countries in Western Europe. A major event in the Cold War was the Berlin Airlift. After World War II, the United States and its allies divided Germany. Berlin was a part of communist East Germany. The city was divided into East and West. In June 1948, Soviet-led forces blocked all roads and railways leading to the western part of Berlin. President Truman quickly ordered military airplanes to fly coal, food, and medicine to the city. The planes kept coming, sometimes landing every few minutes for more than a year. The United States received help from Britain and France. Together, they provided almost 2.5 million tons of supplies on about 280,000 flights. The United States also led the formation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in 1949. NATO was a joint military group. Its purpose was to defend against Soviet forces in Europe. the Soviet Union and its East European allies formed their own joint military group, the Warsaw Pact, 6 years later. In 1953, Soviet leader Joseph Stalin died. His death gave the new American president, Dwight Eisenhower, a chance to deal with new Soviet leaders. In July 1955, Eisenhower and Nikolai Bulganin met in Geneva, Switzerland. The leaders of Britain and France also attended. Eisenhower proposed that the Americans and Soviets agree to let their military bases be inspected by air by the other side. The Soviets later rejected the proposal. Yet, the meeting in Geneva was not considered a failure. After all, the leaders of the world's most powerful nations had shaken hands. Cold War tensions increased, then eased, then increased again over the years. The changes came as both sides attempted to influence political and economic developments around the world. For example, the Soviet Union provided military, economic, and technical aid to communist governments in Asia. The United States then helped 8 Asian nations fight communism by establishing the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, known as CETO. In the 1950s, the United States began sending military advisors to help South Vietnam defend itself against communist North Vietnam. That aid would later expand into a long and bloody period of American involvement in Vietnam. The Cold War also affected the Middle East. In the 1950s, both East and West offered aid to Egypt to build the Aswan High Dam on the Nile River. The West canceled its offer, however, after Egypt bought weapons from the communist government in Czechoslovakia. Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser then seized control of the company that operated the Suez Canal. A few months later, Israel invaded Egypt. France and Britain joined the invasion. For once, the United States and the Soviet Union agreed on a major issue. Both supported a United Nations resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. The Suez Crisis was a political victory for the Soviets. When the Soviet Union supported Egypt, it gained new friends in the Arab world. In 1959, Cold War tensions eased a little. The new Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev, visited Dwight Eisenhower in the United States. The meeting was very friendly. But the next year, relations got worse again. An American U-2 reconnaissance airplane was shot down over the Soviet Union. The plane and its pilot, Francis Gary Powers, were captured. Eisenhower admitted that such planes had been spying on the Soviets for years. In a speech at the United Nations, Khrushchev got so angry that he took off his shoe and beat it on a table. John F. Kennedy followed Eisenhower as president in 1961. During his early days in office, Cuban exiles invaded Cuba. It came to be known as the Bay of Pigs invasion. The forces wanted to oust the communist government of Fidel Castro. America's Central Intelligence Agency had provided training for the exiles. But the United States failed to send military planes to protect them during the invasion. As a result, almost all were killed or taken prisoner by Cuban forces trained and supported by the Soviet Union and Soviet allied nations. At the same time in Europe, tens of thousands of East Germans had been fleeing to the West. East Germany's government decided to stop them. It built a wall separating the eastern and western parts of the city of Berlin. Guards shot at anyone who tried to flee by climbing over. During Kennedy's second year in office, American intelligence reports discovered Soviet missiles in Cuba.
This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.
The Soviet Union denied the missiles were there. Yet American photographs taken from high in the air proved they were. America's ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson.
Let me ask you one simple question. Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation, yes or no?
Mr. Stevenson, would you continue your statement, please? You will receive the answer in the due course. Do not worry.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision. And I'm also prepared to present the evidence in this room.
The Cuban Missile Crisis easily could have resulted in a nuclear war. Americans felt especially threatened with those missiles just 150 kilometers from the Florida coast. But the crisis ended after a week. Khrushchev agreed to remove the missiles if the United States agreed not to interfere in Cuba. Some progress was made in easing Cold War tensions when Kennedy was president. In 1963, the two sides reached a major arms control agreement. They agreed to ban tests of nuclear weapons above ground, underwater, and in space. They also established a direct telephone link between the White House and the Kremlin. Relations between East and West also improved when Richard Nixon was president. He and Leonid Brezhnev met several times. They reached several arms control agreements. One reduced the number of missiles used to shoot down enemy nuclear weapons. It also banned the testing and deployment of long-distance missiles for 5 years. A major change in the Cold War would take place in 1985 when Mikhail Gorbachev became leader of the Soviet Union. He met 4 times with President Ronald Reagan. Gorbachev withdrew Soviet forces from Afghanistan, and he signed an agreement with the United States to destroy all middle-distance and short-distance nuclear missiles. By 1989, there was widespread unrest in Eastern Europe. Gorbachev did not intervene as one Eastern European country after another cut its ties with the Soviet Union. The Berlin Wall, the major symbol of communist oppression, was torn down in November of that year. In less than a year, East and West Germany became one nation again. A few months after that, Warsaw Pact countries officially ended the alliance. The Cold War was over.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm